I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, what is a personality and where does it come from? Is it a true reflection of you? Can you deliberately change your personality, and should you? Well, how would you like to be happier, healthier, more successful, have more friends, and be more likable? Positive personality change appears to be something that many people want to undertake. Studies tell us about 90% of people want to change at least one of their personality traits. Thinking about personality change, though, can feel overwhelming, but there is scientifically proven methods of intervention that can take just a few minutes a day, yet they're powerful enough to create positive, lasting personality changes. We're joined by Olga Kassan, author of Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Do you ever get frustrated with yourself, wonder why you overreacted to something that was kind of dumb, or wonder if you could somehow change your personality? Well, in fact, your personality is constantly changing. You just maybe don't realize it, and it's not always for the better. There's that trauma of life, the weathering down of constant stress. We might be ending up with a worsenality. But how about a personality tune-up? Sharpen up the qualities about yourself that you really like, that can make you healthier, happier, more successful in your career and also at home. Olga Kassan has researched and written about personality change by experimenting on herself. Her new book is Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. And Olga, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So what is a personality?
Yeah, personality is the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that come most reflexively to us. But on top of that, the researchers who study personality change add that personality is also like a tool that can help us get what we want in life. So certain personality traits like extroversion can help you get out there more and meet new people. Traits like conscientiousness can help you get organized and get more done. So it both describes you and it helps you get what you want.
I've seen thought about maybe a personality as being maybe a manifestation of my self-image. Is that true?
Yeah, so it can be. So a lot of times how we act from day to day, when we notice ourselves behaving in a certain way, whether it's, hey, you know, I'm really going out and doing a lot of events and I'm really enjoying them. I must be an extrovert. You know, we kind of reflect that back on ourselves and think we must just, you know, be that way. So in that way, it can be a reflection of our self-image.
But am I my personality?
Yes and no. So your personality definitely describes a lot of what you think and do and the way you'll react to situations. But your personality can also change. It's not the same from day to day.
Right. So I've heard people tell me, you know, I have different personalities. I'm one way at work. I'm one way at home. And I'm one way screaming at people as I drive home from work.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we all have free traits that we, you know, try on in different situations that, help us adapt to the situations that we might find ourselves in.
So how did you come to decide that you wanted to tinker with your personality, that you wanted to make some changes in who you are? You're obviously a successful writer, a dynamite person to hang out with, apparently. You know, why did you want to change any of that?
Yeah, I really found that my personality was undermining my happiness. It was keeping me from enjoying life and appreciating what I had. So I would have a really good day or a day where, mostly good things happened, but maybe one or two frustrating things happened. And I would just really fixate on those frustrating things. And kind of not be able to see the forest for the trees. I wanted to kind of bring down that level of neuroticism, that depression and anxiety that kept me from living in the moment and appreciating what I had. And I also felt like I was very socially isolated, not just because of COVID, but just in general. And I wanted to get out there more and connect with more people. And so that I really saw personality change as the way to do that.
Well, you describe in your book that you had a day that was kind of like pushed you over the edge.
Yes. Yeah. So I had this day where it really exemplifies what I'm talking about because it was not that bad. So I just want to preface with that. But it started with getting a really bad haircut and then going and getting professional photos taken that did not look good, in my opinion, and then getting stuck in traffic, and then having this debacle with a shopping cart, broken shopping cart at the grocery store. You know, the whole time my boss is slacking me, asking for edits on a story. You know, and the pressure is just kind of building and building and building inside me. And I kind of just have a meltdown at the end of this day. You know, I start crying and kind of just freaking out. You know, but even later that day, even as I kind of reflected back on what happened, it wasn't really that bad of a day. It was really just my personality, you know, underscoring all of those frustrating things that happened and not appreciating the fact that I was in Miami, you know, I was getting photos of myself taken at a photo shoot, you know, how great is that? You know, ultimately everything worked out fine. You know, my hair didn't look that bad. And that's really the kind of thing that neuroticism can do. The personality trait of neuroticism is it can keep us from, you know, appreciating what we have and instead make us dwell in the negative.
You know, having the idea that you don't take pictures well is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy because
yeah.
When you sit in front of the camera, you can see the pain on that person's
yeah.
face. But if you decide, you know, I'm the kind of person that takes great pictures, I'm very photogenic, then suddenly you step in front of the camera and you come to life. And next thing you know, those pictures are pretty good. So, you know, maybe that's one way that you can kind of look at that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it was funny because these photos, I was supposed to look kind of very serious and severe in the photos. It was just like what the photo shoot
called writer.
For. Yeah. So I was like looking like very severe. It wasn't, you know, a happy, joyful look for me. But I was like, oh man, these look so bad. These look so bad. But then actually when the photos were published, I didn't get any comments, you know, saying that they looked bad, even though people really don't hesitate to tell me what they think of me.
Especially in social media.
Exactly.
That's another thing. Don't look at social media if you want to maintain your personality in a high order. So how did you get from there to like, okay, I need to work on myself. You know, I need to go from the Incredible Hulk to Professor Hulk, you know, as we see in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, so personality is really behind a lot of what we think of as different types of self-improvement. If you're trying to get more organized or become more productive, that's personality change. If you're trying to make more friends, that's personality change. If you're trying to be nicer to your spouse or to your kids, that's personality change. And so it was through my job, I had kind of learned about these studies where, you know, professors would go out to people and say, hey, do you want to change your personality? And they would say, yeah, I do, as a matter of fact, you know, on one or two traits. And they would say, okay, here's what you do. So if you want to become more extroverted, go out and have coffee with two people, you know, have lunch with three people and go to a concert with one person, you know, in the next 2 weeks. And they would go and do those things. And after, you know, several months, they would build up this habit of extroversion almost. And it would start to reflect back on their personality. And they would actually start to see themselves as an extrovert. So that's kind of what I wanted to try across the personality traits that I was working on.
So we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we'll talk about personality tests, whether or not they're to be believed, how to properly take a personality test. Maybe it helps to have someone at your elbow reminding of who you actually are, so you don't kind of try to game the test. But, you know, I also want to get into OCEAN, what is that, and dig into some of these traits about your personality and how, you know, you can make this work. You can become a happier, healthier, more successful person. You can do this in a way that feels almost effortless. It seems like something that we could all kind of benefit from. So we're going to be talking about Me But Better, the science and the promise of personality change. When we come back, our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Is there something about your personality that you would kind of like to tinker with, to tune up? The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And The Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How would you like to tune up your personality, give it an upgrade, level up your personality? Well, it is possible. There are some scientifically proven ways of doing this so that you can kind of get in there and sort of sharpen up certain aspects about your personality, or maybe tune down some things that are not really working in your favor. Olga Kazan is with us. She's written the book Me But Better, The Science and the Promise of Personality Change. Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to join the conversation, have you tried to change your personality, maybe with the brute force sledgehammer technique? Did that work for you? Or maybe there's some other ways of doing this that would be a little more agreeable, things that would work for you. So, Olga, I think the first step is figuring out, like, what is my personality? So how did you do that?
Yeah, so I used a test that's called the Big Five, which is, it means the Big Five personality traits. And that's really the framework that most personality psychologists now use to measure personality. They don't really use things like the Myers-Briggs anymore. They use this thing called the Big Five. And I did it through a website that was created by Nathan Hudson, who's this psychology professor in Dallas, who his work kind of forms a lot of the book. But you can really use any Big Five test that's on the internet, as long as it's scientific.
Right. And so the Big Five, it's the OCEAN model. These five big traits: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism. And so, do you take these on one by one, or how does that work out?
Yeah, so the test will tell you where you fall on each of these Big Five traits. So it'll tell you you're more extroverted than, 40% of the population. So that means you're pretty extroverted. You're about, in the middle. So everyone's going to fall kind of on a spectrum of these traits. And then what I did, I really wanted to increase on extroversion and agreeableness, and I wanted to decrease my neuroticism, which is like the depression and anxiety one. And so I did take them on one by one, but you don't have to do it that way. You could start a meditation class and start an improv class if that is what works for you. But I just decided to do it one by one.
So let's talk about neuroticism. You're anxious versus emotional stability that you might have. And you said that's where you were like, okay, that was the trigger that told you we need to talk about this. How did you deal with that? How do you tell yourself that, that personality trait needs to be, we need to take it down from 11 to about a 5?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was something where I had just struggled with anxiety for so long. And I just really noticed it kind of undermining situations that I should have enjoyed. Instead of, whenever I had a good moment, a book or an article coming out or, a celebration of some kind, I was always thinking about, well, how could this go wrong? What's next? What do I need to worry about on the horizon? So I was really kind of tired of living in that mindset.
That's normal, okay? When as soon as you hit publish on something and you put it out there, your next feeling is like, oh no, what did I do?
Yeah. I mean, to some extent for journalism, right, you're always going to have that next day anxiety of like, you're only as good as your last article.
Hopefully I didn't put anything in here, that's going to get me in trouble or factually wrong.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But it was kind of for me applying to more than just that. And it was, maybe I wanted to be less like a journalist and more like a actuary or some kind of mentally healthier profession. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to be just as ambitious and kind of, career oriented and, hardworking as I was, but without kind of the kind of constant stress and negativity that I was experiencing.
Where is ambition on this schedule, on this five? Which one would be ambition?
So it's interesting. Ambition is not one of the traits, but one of the things I really struggled with neuroticism is that I worried that if I became less anxious, I would also become less ambitious. That I, because the big kind of principle of this meditation class that I took in order to become less neurotic is that you should stop striving. And of course, as all ambitious people know, striving is how you get what you want. You know, you get up early and send that extra email, or you make that extra phone call to a source, or whatever it is you're doing. And so I was like, I don't get how you're supposed to just let go and detach and still be really ambitious and really honestly be striving. So that was something that I honestly really wrestled with in the book, is like, how do Buddhists get anything done?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I wonder about the, ambition, because if there was a thing that, but people would probably tell me to turn that down from 11 to about a 5 or a 6. But so, I have, I feel like I'm very much aligned with your husband, Rich, in that I have this unlimited supply of undeserved self-confidence.
Yeah, and that's good. So it sounds like you're maybe not very anxious about yourself, at least, and that you also have a lot of extroversion and can kind of go out there and talk to people. So, yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess so for this thing. But so you go out and talk to people all the time. You write all these amazing articles for, the magazine, and the Atlantic, and you put yourself in situations where you have to be that person that digs for answers. And frequently find ourselves playing that role, but that's not really ourselves. We put on the armor and we go out there into the world.
Yeah, and my struggle with that, so that was really with increasing extroversion. And my struggle there was really that, yeah, I did have a lot of, conversations. I talked to people on the phone all day, every day. But these conversations are interviews, and they were very scripted. And these people I was talking to were not my friends. I wasn't sharing anything about myself. I was trying to get responses or answers that would help me craft a story. And I really felt like I was uncomfortable being myself in social situations, and I was uncomfortable when the conversation wasn't an interview, when it was just an open-ended kind of free-for-all like you would have with anyone at a, cookout or what have you. And so for me, doing improv and kind of pushing myself into these more extroverted kind of situations was really good practice for what happens when you don't have perfect control of a conversation, because it's not an interview and you're kind of sharing as much as you're trying to get.
Yeah, my wife gets mad at me because sometimes I start talking to people in the elevators, strangers, and just start talking to people in line. And let's get everyone. We're standing in line for the for to get on board the airplane. Why do we all have to be strangers? Let's get to know each other, And so I would call that's the social lubricant. Let's make things fun. But then I realize you can't say that anymore because it sounds like something that P. Diddy buys by the gallon. But how do figure out being an extrovert, and then we're also still people who are the most extroverted also at times where they want to be by themselves. They are also introverted.
Yeah, most of us are somewhere in between. Most people aren't just total extroverts or total introverts. Probably even you have, moments where you just kind of want to relax by yourself and not talk to other people in the
Yeah.
airplane line. And that's totally normal. The key is really in balancing those two and not in embracing your introversion so much that you really have no social connection, that you're, either always on your phone, kind of connecting digitally, or you're always by yourself or with your immediate family, which is honestly kind of what I was doing. I was kind of either on Twitter, or I was doing interviews, or I was with my partner. And I wanted to have kind of more social interaction than that.
And so, how have you made progress? Have you become less anxious? How did that happen? What kind of exercises did you do to bring your neuroticism, down?
Yeah, for neuroticism, it really did come down to mindfulness meditation. In particular, this class that I took called MBSR. And what was interesting about that, so I wasn't really a natural meditator going into it. I kind of honestly resisted meditation. I'm not one of those people who likes to sit there doing nothing. But the class came with a lot of sort of Buddhist teachings and sort of Buddhism light, I guess, like little aphorisms and things. And at the time, I thought they were kind of silly. But over time, I found myself relying on them a lot, like kind of thinking about them, helping, you know, they would help me snap out of these negative thought spirals I would have. And at the same time, I was meditating for about 45 minutes a day, never really quite enjoying it, honestly, just like kind of hovering between bored and like, is this almost over? But at the end, my neuroticism did go down. My depression went down by a lot, and my anxiety went down by, you know, a fair amount as well, though it was still high. I really think that the meditation was just sort of doing something there in the background, you know, without me maybe realizing it.
So was this like classic meditation where you're just trying to clear the mind and not think about anything but the moment and maybe your breath? Or are you doing guided visualizations where you're trying to see yourself in these situations that you would normally be uncomfortable, but trying to change the tone of the situation in your mind where you're actually having a good time?
Oh, that's interesting. So I did a little bit of guided meditation. And the kind of guided meditation that I did was loving kindness, which is where you sort of reassure yourself that you're loved and that, you know, you wish yourself like peace and happiness, sort of like kind of cuddle yourself for like a few minutes. So that was kind of interesting. But mostly what I did was just insight meditation where you follow your breath. This is like kind of a tricky distinction, but you're not really supposed to clear your mind. You're supposed to just let your thoughts kind of pass, like kind of see, like kind of almost like clouds in the sky.
You are not your thoughts. You are the observer of your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm having the thought that blank, blank, blank. That was challenging for me because I am my thoughts a lot of the time, you know, but it did kind of over time start to work, or at least I was able to like unplug from my thoughts maybe for a few minutes or even just, you know, for a couple seconds, maybe interrupt my thoughts. And, you know, of course, there's at the same time that that's happening, you're regulating your nervous system, or supposedly. So I think maybe that's how it all started to work for me.
So in order to change your personality, you know, it has to be rooted in truth. You have to develop new truths about yourself through these new experiences that, you know, challenged your previous perceptions of who you thought that you were. You went out, you did new things, and you recognize, hey, I am not confined with these limited beliefs. I am better. I have done better. And therefore, I'm probably a different person than I thought that I was.
Yeah, exactly. That's really how we kind of learn who we are, essentially. Like you kind of might tell yourself, I'm not good at socializing. But if you go out and socialize enough and, you know, you have a decent time, first of all, you'll probably get better at it. Second of all, you kind of have to start to admit that, hey, I do actually socialize and I am pretty good at it and people like my company. So you do start to change your concept of yourself. That's sort of how personality change happens.
And then start recognizing people are kind. They're not judging me as harsh as I'm judging them. Maybe if you reduce how you judge other people, you will realize that, you know, everybody is just trying to really, you know, get along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's really what I found is most of these activities that I did involved other people. Even the meditation class was sort of a group Zoom kind of seminar. That to me was really reassuring because we were all struggling with similar things.
Right. So when we come back from this break, we're going to take on some of these other parts of the OCEAN model. These five traits that describe a person's personality. These traits can be modified, they can be sharpened, they can be, you know, brought down to a more manageable level. Modern psychology tells us that a person's personality is malleable, particularly in response to major life experiences. intentional efforts like therapy, and also aging. So what can you expect as you get older about your personality? What have you learned from your personality as you've gotten older? Is your personality your best friend? Give us a call. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. What's your relationship with your personality? How would you like it sharpened, tuned up? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book, Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. We're joined by the author, Olga Kassan, and she experimented on herself, and she writes about it in this book, talking about how she was able to become happier. Is that true? Happier, healthier, more successful in your personal life?
Yeah, I would say happier, more content, more outgoing. Yeah, more connected with others.
If you've got a question or comments about tinkering around with your personality, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You know, some people might think, Olga, that messing around with your personality is distasteful. You're fake. Why try to fake up your personality?
Yeah. So a lot of researchers think we actually have kind of multiple authenticities, that, you know, in the same way you don't talk to your boss like you talk to your kid, you're not really the same in every situation or even from day to day. And that being kind of rigidly real, I guess, or whatever you decide is real, is maybe not the best thing, because we all have to adjust slightly from situation to situation. And we all need a little bit of extroversion, a little bit of introversion, you know, a little bit of, you know, emotional stability. And yeah, honestly, a little bit of neuroticism to get through life. Like we all need kind of elements of these traits. So I don't necessarily think that it's fake. I think it's sort of just trying to be the best you. I mean, that's kind of where the title of the book comes from.
Yeah, but they may say, you know, you should just be yourself and try to adapt, like changing your accent. You know, some people think, you know, trying to adapt your accent is sometimes putting on airs or whatever. But, you know, you're from Texas. You don't sound like you're from Texas, at least not to my ear, because I'm in Texas and you sound like a normal person. So, you know, people think that you shouldn't be messing around with this type of, you know, your expression of yourself.
Yeah, well, okay. So I'm so glad you brought up accents, because I used to have a Texas accent because I am from Texas. In fact, I'm from West Texas. So I had a thick accent. Yes. But I moved to DC for college, and I've been around DC people, you know, for the past, whatever, 20 years. My accent went away. And similarly, you know, there's some research that shows that the people that we spend time around also influence our personality. So if you're around a lot of extroverts, you kind of start to feel more extroverted, you know, if you work in sales or something like that. Or if you went to, you know, liberal arts college where everyone was really philosophical and kind of musing about what the truth of life is, you know, you start to get more open to experiences. I don't know, is that not really you anymore? You know, is it becoming you? I think it's more kind of true to say that kind of the who you are is kind of constantly in flux, and it constantly depends on your environment and, you know, also the situations that you put yourself into.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255. Having a conversation with Olga Kassan. Her book is Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. And let's go to Lola. And Lola, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I responded to what the guest said about how sometimes you have to get away from the situation. And I have such great anxiety. I had to quit my job, but then, it's kind of funny because I got less stress, but then I'm still very anxious. And, all that has been stated is trying to get out. And in this society, getting out means having to spend money, and I don't have the money. So if I try to say, hey, let's go here or there, then I have to think, do I have the money? can I even go get a cup of coffee with someone? I don't want to be a moocher. And all those things, just, I can't, I just stay away from people so I don't have to, like, spend money that I don't have.
Well, Lola, thank you for calling. Appreciate that. You know, you shouldn't have to be limited by, you know, our financial resources. There are things that are around us all the time that are the community oriented, and lots of opportunities to meet people. Well, we know. So Olga, clearly Lola needs to take baby steps.
Yeah, I mean, and I totally understand that, and it can get really expensive. You know, if you're trying to make more friends, you know, let's meet for coffee, let's meet for lunch, let's meet for dinner, you know, all those lunches and dinners start to add up. I would recommend just starting with free activities. There's a lot out there that's free, even that I did for the book that was free. So meetup.com is a great resource. You rarely have to pay for meetups, like unless there is like a food or drink component. And it's basically people getting together. You can, you know, go hiking. It can be a book club. There's sort of all sorts of different activities on there.
There's anything that you have an interest in, if it's quilting, whatever, they have groups for that. And it's a great way, if you live in a big city, if you don't have a lot of friends, to meet new people. And we do know, Olga, that, you know, meeting new people is something that our brains crave. Seeing new faces in person is responsible, it brings about neurogenesis of the brain, you know, fostering new brain cells. It's really good for us. So this is something that would actually really be beneficial.
Yeah, and it could also bring down some of that anxiety, because you can start to see that, you know, other people have similar challenges, and you can maybe even find resources through those people, you know, to deal with some of the anxiety.
Let's go to another caller, and we have Sean. Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a general question about this kind of psychology self-help approach that we take. We have more self-help books, more psychologists on the individual than ever before. Consumption of this kind of literature has gone up. It's exponentially how much it is. Yet happiness and health is going down in the United States. But in places like Europe, happiness and health are going up by generation. And so I just wonder, and it's no offense to her research, because the psychology, you can control away and get these independent effects. So I'm sure that the research is valid. But we can't control away society once you get out into the public. So I just wonder, at what point are we going to say we need to stop putting it on individuals and start looking at the bigger social structures? Because other places are doing better than us without all these self-help books. With all this, you can do it yourself. They just take it a point to think about it from a structural standpoint. And I'm not sure that another one of these, we have the self-help section in the Barnes & Noble is getting bigger and bigger, and more is being consumed. There's so much research on how much is being consumed, yet it's not helping because there's a bigger structural issue here. Thank you.
All right, great points there, Sean. First off, Olga, do you consider this to be a self-help book?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hope it can help people. Some people have said that it has helped them. But it's written kind of more like in a memoir or like guinea pig kind of style. So you could just choose to read it that way, I guess, if you don't enjoy self-help. But one thing I wanted to say is I absolutely am not saying that we shouldn't have structural changes that could make people happier. I mean, I definitely think, you know, bringing back infrastructure that would help people, you know, meet in person, reducing kind of some of the stress that people are under, you know, through better social services and things like that. That could really go a long way to helping people feel less neurotic, you know, through, you know, society wide. But the fact of the matter is that we might be waiting a while for that. And some of the things that we want to happen might never happen. So what I was hoping to offer is tools for people to make changes in their own lives, you know, even small changes, while we kind of wait or even push for some of those greater societal changes.
Yeah, the self-help section of the Barnes & Noble, I sometimes call that the selfish help section, because it's about many people's favorite topic, me, me, me. But, you know, I do, when I read your book, Olga, and I'm thinking about these proven, scientifically proven methods to help people be healthier, happier, and more successful, particularly in their personal life, you know, I do think about, like, you know, many, many people can benefit from this. Okay, the biggest problem that a lot of people don't have is falling over in our yoga class. A lot of people have really big problems, and I think that they can really benefit from learning how to adapt better, be friends with themselves, and engage with others in a positive, constructive way.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, and some of these personality changes can help you kind of reach your goals despite the limits that you're facing in life. So some of the people, especially in the conscientiousness chapter, use some of those skills to, you know, start their own business or to change careers, or to kind of get going in their career. So it's really something you can do kind of wherever you are without necessarily waiting for policymakers.
Well, I'm sure you've heard from a lot of people that they really relate to your story about being so anxious. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think a lot of us have a lot of anxiety. And I think, I don't know, people who have a lot of anxiety are drawn to books about how to mitigate anxiety. I also think it's one of those things that we, I don't know, are kind of expected not to talk about. So I'm a new parent, and all new parents have a ton of anxiety, but I'm actually in a support group with other moms. And I've noticed that we kind of try to wave away each other's feelings of anxiety. Like, someone will be like, "Hey, I'm really worried about this." And then everyone else will be like, "You're overreacting," or like, "Don't worry about it." But of course we all do worry about it. It's kind of not, I don't know. It's not popular, I guess, to talk about anxiety or to address it head on.
Oh, when I tell people I don't have anxiety, I don't have a worry in the world, they think I'm the devil. So, yeah. How dare you? You know, don't you have something to worry about? Well, not so much. You know, life's pretty good. All right, so we're going to take a break here, and we'll come back. Our phone lines are open. And if you got a question or comment about personality change, sharpening your personality, are we too self-obsessed? Is that the problem? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about the book Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. We're joined by the author, Olga Kassan, and she is a staff writer for The Atlantic, and her previous book is Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Is this kind of a sequel to that?
Oh, you know, I wouldn't think of it that way, but, you know, maybe there. I did mention personality change in Weird very briefly because some of the people who I interviewed actually used personality change to kind of navigate their weirdness. So maybe in a way it is kind of a sequel.
All right. Maybe you're on. You have a thing here you're trying to work out. Well, let's talk about agreeableness, one of the words in the ocean model. So compassionate versus competitiveness, that's one way of looking at this. I do think we're going through a compassion crisis in the United States right now. How can we as a nation stop funding programs to feed the world's starving populations? How can we be so cruel? We're turning into this extremely cruel nation. You know, why aren't we concerned about these compassionate levels en masse? And I wonder about, you know, if a book like yours talking about individuals, but can these things be taken and looked at as a society?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that is just that agreeableness, it's really hard to change. So first of all, in these studies where they ask people if they want to change their personalities, basically no one picks agreeableness. And when they do, it's very difficult to change it. And there was like a tweet.
Well, explain that. Explain what is it about agreeableness that's a problem?
Yeah. So agreeableness is really caring about other people. It's having a lot of empathy for others. And also trusting others. And I think we've just become so individualistic as a society that that is just a really hard leap to make. There was this tweet a few years ago that I always reference that was like, "I don't know how to tell you that you should care about other people." I think it was in reference to someone like suggesting that we cut Medicaid or something like that. And that is kind of what it comes down to, is like, it's really hard to convince someone else to care about other people. And there's all these strategies that people have tried, like, oh, what's in it for you? Like, it's actually better for you if, like, USAID continues funding,
Well, I mean,
food
there are
programs.
plenty of benefits of being compassionate to other people. It does make you healthier. It does make you happier, especially when you think about, okay, your circle of compassion. Who do you include in the people that you care about? Is it only people in your family? But if you can start spreading that circle out further and further and start recognizing that you have a responsibility to everyone in the planet, and trying to help them and relieve suffering at every opportunity. You do benefit from that. I mean, there's a lot of upside to being compassionate.
That's right. And really the research shows that a lot of the personality traits correlate with income, but not as much agreeableness, but they do have these other benefits. So agreeable people, they're happier, they're less likely to get divorced, they have a better quality of life, and they cope better with adversity. There was a study that tracked hundreds of people who became disabled over a period of 4 years and found that those who were more agreeable bounced back psychologically much more quickly than the ones who weren't as agreeable. So it really can have these benefits for you being a nicer person, out in the world. But I think maybe that doesn't occur to us
I
sometimes, or
think
we
people
don't
see being
realize it.
compassionate as a weakness, and they don't see it as a strength.
I heard that a lot when I was interviewing people. They would say, I don't want to become more agreeable because I don't want to be a pushover. But it's really not about just doing whatever everyone else asks of you. I talk a lot about boundaries in the agreeableness chapter because that's really the key to preventing agreeableness from spilling over into just being a people pleaser. But you can be agreeable and be compassionate to people and get along with people and still have boundaries for what you will and won't accept.
Right. And so is the opposite of being, is it competitive, being compassionate versus competitive? Because I'm a highly competitive person. I want to win. I have a killer instinct. That shouldn't make me less compassionate.
It's not necessarily the opposite. You can be very competitive and also compassionate. I mean, if you see, professional sports, or people running marathons, or even just people competing in the workplace, often there's a lot of competition there. But it's, about making sure that you're not fighting dirty and you're not, undermining someone else for your own gain. That it's truly about whoever wins and not about who can undermine who.
So the intervention or the opportunities for development, you talked about meditation, but is there, what else can we do?
So for agreeableness, I actually went to a conversation workshop that focused on how to have kind of deeper and more meaningful conversations with people. And for that, what I found really interesting was that a lot of times when I would talk to people, I would kind of snap into small talk. Like it would be, what flight did you take to get here? Have you been here before? What do you do for work? Where do you live? And I would kind of collect all these facts, and then I would have all these facts, and I'd be like, thank you, and then like move on to the next person and collect more facts, or we would do it to each other. But really what I kind of learned from this conversation workshop leader, Georgie Nightingale, was to kind of ask people for the meaning behind what they were telling me. So instead of just collecting facts or even just statements from that person, ask them why they're telling you that. Why is that important to them? What's the meaning? Why is that meaningful to them? That can really lead you into this deeper conversational tangent that can help you know the person better and kind of feel more agreeable to them. And that can extend to when you're talking to someone who you don't share their political philosophy or their philosophy on something else in the world, because you're never going to settle on the facts. Like you're going to have different sets of facts, but you can focus on why are they telling you this? Why is it important for them to have you agree with their theory of the world, and
Well,
that can kind of.
I'm not happy with saying that we can't agree on the facts. The facts should be the facts. I'm gonna go to Daniel on the phone and see what Daniel's got to say. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for taking my call so late. Just real quick, it's kind of backtracking about what y'all talked about, agreeable people and empathetic people. And I'd like to think that I'm one of those people, and I try to give people the benefit of doubt. But there are a lot of people out there that do see that as a weakness. They want to take advantage of that, and they want to try to pressure you. And there's a switch in my mind that goes off, and it's like Jekyll and Hyde. And you could call it a defense mechanism. You could call it a jaded. But you know, it's just – it doesn't – I don't want it to affect my everyday life, but you just have to be cautious when you want to be kind to someone or offer to help out, because there's so many people out there that will take advantage of it. And that was just my comment. I was just curious to know if she came across that herself.
All right, Daniel, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Olga, your reaction?
Yeah, I would just recommend, I mean, honestly, I had the same problem when I was working on agreeableness that came up with one of my friends, actually. And really what I learned is that boundaries are sort of the key to getting around that. And that's just, I'm sorry, I can't do that, but I can, you know, X, Y, Z. I'm sorry, I'm not able to, you know, to do that. I'm sorry, you know, we agreed we wouldn't talk about that. And just having to restate the boundary and be really firm about that. That's not disagreeable. That's just kind of standing up for what you feel.
So was it worth it to reduce your level of anxiousness, sharpen up some of these other qualities that you have, the effort that you put into working on yourself, on your personality, trying to become the more of a personality that you really wanted to have out there? Was all the effort worth it?
I think it was. I especially am glad that I did it before having a child, because I think my approach to new parenthood has been completely different given that I went through this experiment. I think in particular, I've really put a focus on connecting with other moms and kind of trying to have a social network of moms, you know, that I can go to for, you know, this is weird. Is this normal? Is this normal? Are they supposed to be doing this? You know, that, but also just sharing the good things and the kind of funny things that happen along the way. I think the old me would have been a lot more cloistered and kind of off on my own and trying to kind of white knuckle my way through it. So I'm really glad I didn't do that.
So white knuckling your way through it, we don't want that. We don't want to force ourselves to try to become a different person. It should flow like water, like being you. If you can internalize and visualize the person that you want to be, then shouldn't your personality kind of go with that?
Yeah, I would say so. And I would really focus more on the end goal of like what your values are and what you're trying to accomplish rather than the specific activities that you're doing on the way there. So for me, like I inevitably found things that I was trying that were not working for me, like leading my own meetup group. And I ended up kind of abandoning those and focusing more on, okay, the overall objective is to become more extroverted. And there are other activities out there other than this particular meetup.
How quickly, almost out of time, how did your self-talk change along the way? Internal monologue.
Something awkward would happen on a meetup hike or, you know, just at a gathering or something. And I would be like, oh, well, like, oh, that was awkward. Oh, maybe next time. Or, you know, just kind of brush it off a little more as opposed to dwelling on it or feeling a lot of shame, I guess.
Shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, your self-talk should be your biggest cheerleader. You're awesome. Way to go. You can do this. Keep going. Next time's going to be even better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm not quite there, but I'm like halfway there. Yeah.
All right. Well, Olga Kazan, thank you so much. Your book, the writing is sharp, enjoyable, pleasant. I really got enjoyed the writing, the reading. And the book is Me But Better, The Science and Promise of Personality Change. So fun to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.